Welcome everyone to tonight's Citizens Climate University. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight we are featuring the theme of campaign season activities within CCU, which is a weekly webinar program of citizen climate lobbies that provides CCEL supporters like you and me with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective advocacy. So tonight we're lucky enough to have with us our very own Senior Director of Government Affairs for CCEL, Ben Pendergrass. He is part of the CCEL Government Relations Team in Washington, D.C., and in that role works to advance the policy goals of CCEL in Congress and has been on the Hill for over 14 years, both as congressional staff and as a government relations professional. For several years, Ben worked with Senator Pete Domenici, and most recently he was Senior Vice President in Policy and Legislative Affairs for a National Trade Association. It is an honor to have you on the line tonight, Ben. Thank you so much for being here. We're going to have a couple of quick goals for our learning tonight, and then we'll jump right in. After tonight's lesson, we hope that attendees should be able to understand the following three areas: understanding why CCEL supports campaign season involvement, really highlighting the challenges in doing this work consistently and the importance of reaching out across the field, and then also really recognizing the importance of preparing ahead of time for your own campaign season events. Unless you're in Texas and Illinois, the rest of the country is just about to get into a flurry with this activity. So we're happy to provide some timely resources here. And tonight's agenda is pretty straightforward. We're going to give you a quick context and overview. We'll have a chance to learn more about how to best prepare for meeting with candidates, talk about the essential ideas in building connections with those candidates across the field, share some best practices and some guidance to follow if you're interested in finding out more about forums, and then talk specifically more about activities to really avoid as CCEL chapters. And then we'll close with examples from the field and then have an actual kind of more robust Q&A discussion following that for the final 20 minutes or so. So without further ado, let's just jump right in with some context and overview. I'll pass it to Ben in just a little bit, but I did want to say just a couple of quick things, and that is largely just that some CCEL supporters we know may not have the energy right now to, you know, really engage in bipartisanship during the campaign season. And it's really essential that everyone knows we give you full permission for all volunteers and supporters to really participate or not participate as your energy is currently leading you. You know, do what's best from you away from CCEL. And I think the important case can be made that we as an organization play a really critical role in campaign primary season. I think that there aren't a lot of organizations out there right now in the field engaging candidates on both sides of the aisle on the priority and the importance and the imperative of having climate change be a key stable part of their portfolio. And so know that this is an essential way that you can help out in really building out that grassroots network. And I think the additional case to be made this year within this context is, as you can see, this is an absolutely record-breaking year for candidate activity. This chart is from the Nonpartisan Campaign Finance Institute, and really what it shows is the number of people that are filing by party for challenging in districts across the country that have raised a certain amount of money, you know, $50,000, which is, you know, quite a threshold to cross. And really what we're trying to make the case for here is that this is a wonderful opportunity, right? As can be seen, you know, tallying up the columns, this is a real historic year for many more people getting involved in the election process. And one advantage of having so many candidates running is the expanded opportunity for our groups to get to meet with, educate, and build capacity with such a wide and diverse field of community leaders on both sides of the aisle. So with that, I'm going to pass it to you, Ben, and I hope that we're inspired to learn more and jump right in on how we can get involved.
Meeting with the candidates. This is really a chance to get to know candidates because a lot of them won't have a record. They might not have held public office before. And candidates especially are really eager to meet voters. It's the only way they're going to get elected. So since it's a good time to introduce them to CCEL and our legislation and start getting to know them. They are also often in the process of refining their positions and talking points and may appreciate resources to help them do that. I will really say a lot of candidates come, especially when they're running for the first time, they don't have set positions yet, so they can really be shaped during this process. If you gathered information about local impacts of climate change or health impacts or local businesses that would benefit from the transition to clean energy, those would be appropriate to offer to the candidate if they express interest in them. It's important to attend candidate events as an individual, not representing CCL officially. Keep your attendance at candidate events symmetrical. If you attend one candidate's event, go to the others on both sides of the aisle. You can introduce yourself as a constituent and even as a CCL member, but the important distinction is that you aren't representing the organization officially. Start building connections. First off, treat this just like any member connection with CCL. Assign a liaison. One of the stories we have is concerning Congressman Bacon. He says the main reason he became why he joined the Climate Solutions Caucus immediately was due to the outreach done in the campaign season by the local CCL chapter. Assign someone to be the face of CCL with that candidate with an eye toward that role continuing if the candidate gets elected. The candidate liaison could ask to meet with them, invite them to a forum, research the candidate, watch for forums, or provide useful resources, polling data, and talking points. Be clear in that relationship that CCL is not making an endorsement, but is there to be a resource for any candidate that would like our help. If you are engaged with the party, you can also working on party platform resolutions, work through the political process, and presents an opportunity to educate more people about carbon fee and dividend. However, be aware that even if adopted, the resolutions are unlikely to get much notice from members of Congress who pretty much ignore the platform. Start early in the year by contacting the county party office to get information on the process, and keep in mind they may not be as interested in recruiting us to join with them as we are in recruiting them to our cause.
One other way of really building those critical connections that Ben has been talking about is a resource or a series of resources we're actually really proud to introduce tonight. If you're interested in building these connections with candidates on the left and the right, we actually have a series of resources we wanted to highlight. Bob Naris and the Progressive Caucus have created a wonderful Progressive Talking Points link that you can see here on the very top. We also have some talking points that are created for conservative and libertarian leading candidates as well that Jim Tolbert and his team with the Conservative Caucus have put together. And if you're also interested in sharing a resource directly with your candidates about climate change and carbon pricing and how both of these can provide support they need as a winning proposition, we're highlighting here on this slide the Republican candidate guides and the Democrat candidates guides to climate change and carbon pricing. Now, again, they're intended to be directly shared with your candidates that you're doing outreach with. And what they do is they include public opinion data, talking points, policy landscape discussion, and sample party resolutions that Ben was talking about earlier, all of which are really helpful in building that relationship, as we know that only by securing support from a significant number of elected officials from both of the major parties will our plan actually be implemented into law. Republican Guide was spearheaded largely by Peter Brin, and the Democratic Guide was spearheaded largely by CCL Regional Coordinator David Holmquist. Thanks to both of those and their teams for putting them together. So if you have any questions on those, we look forward to hearing more about them.
Another option is to organize a forum. Before doing the work yourself, look for what forums are already being planned by other organizations, service clubs, local unions, etc. If one isn't going on, consider reaching out to ask the local affiliate organizations in your community who have hosted ones in the past to consider hosting. Hosting a candidate forum is truly not for everyone, both in terms of capacity as well as local political considerations. Given that it is essential as CCL groups to get to know the candidates running on both sides and attend events that are happening on both sides, one alternative to hosting yourself may also be considering co-hosting a nonpartisan one. However, several rules govern our activity and behavior as a nonprofit being involved with co-hosting events. Other nonprofits, like the well-known League of Women Voters, have provided helpful guidance that reminds nonprofit organizations that they may sponsor nonpartisan voter education projects, such as debates, provided certain rules are followed. The guiding principle for such debates is that there be fair and impartial treatment of all candidates, with nothing that promotes or advances one candidate over another. As a nonprofit, it is essential given FEC laws that govern how we engage in the political process that we do not hold events where only one candidate is present. This is in a so-called empty chair debate. Given how easily construed this can be, even if the intent is educational, as a partisan activity. CCL chapters may co-sponsor or host candidate forums to which all major party candidates in that election are invited. However, we strongly recommend not hosting a forum yourself unless it is actually confirmed that there will be participation from both sides of the aisle. It is also essential that before moving forward with local plans for hosting a forum, to consult with and get your regional or state coordinators' feedback on the strategic priorities for your area and how a forum can best serve them. There are many more details available for those who are interested in understanding more about the regulatory framework, but the bottom line is that chapters need to make a thorough and good faith effort to ensure the participation of at least two candidates for a specific office are and must make clear to forum attendees and in the pre-publicity and post-publicity, if applicable, that other candidates or parties were invited to participate. This avoids the impression that we are not taking a partisan stance by omission. When you decide to do a candidate forum, you got to organize it. If all the other considerations that we talked about have been thought through and you still feel it is strategic, your team might consider holding a forum exclusively on climate change. Give out questions in advance, along with background information to the candidates, so that the candidates could shine, and because preparing for the forum would also cause them to study the material. The eventual winner of the election may come into office already knowing CCL, our strengths and our legislation, and supportive of our efforts before arriving in DC. Considering a list of plan like this one from the American Association of University Women, which is much more detailed and descriptive about all the critical planning that goes into organizing forums. The slides tonight include a link to the document and a more thorough walkthrough of these speaker notes. Be sure and plan ahead. Pick a time and date to host your forum. Avoid religious or government holidays, dates when other community functions are scheduled, and business hours. Look for a location that will attract a broad range of community members, such as a local school, community center, or library. Invite the candidates. Send an invitation letter to the candidates well before the planned event and follow up with a phone call. As a non-profit, non-partisan organization, CCL must extend an invitation to all major candidates in the election. Be flexible. It may take some time to find a date that will work for all the candidates' schedules. When inviting candidates, be sure and share information about CCL as you see fit. Select the format. A candidate forum can take place in many formats. Possibilities include candidates give prepared remarks and attendees ask follow-up questions from microphones in the audience. Candidates are asked prepared questions on themes important to CCL and your community about climate. Or candidates are asked questions that the audience submits on index cards. At the end, candidates provide closing statements with an equal amount of time given to each candidate. Regardless of your format, you'll need a moderator to introduce the candidates. Start the dialogue and keep the discussion moving. Ask a well-known nonpartisan member of your community to serve in this role. She or he will help generate interest in the event and add credibility. Materials. Give CCL a presence at your candidate forum. Set up a check-in table where attendees can pick up CCL flyers and signups. Fill the seats. You know, you got to have turnout for these events. Use these tips to share your invitation far and wide. Reach out to diverse organizations. Consider co-organizing your candidate forum with a like-minded organization. Working in a coalition allows you to reach more people, increase CCL membership, and gain additional exposure. The extra hands will help you divide the work so you can plan an even bigger event and you can share networks for better publicity. Generate an audience. Spread the word to local CCL chapters and members in your area via emails, calls, and social media. Send invitations to college and university partners, coalition members, and other guests. And last but not least, invite the public. Post about the event on Facebook and Twitter, submit an announcement to a free community bulletin board, or share the invitation in newspapers and community cable outlets. Try to invite local coverage. Send a media advisory and notifying the news media about your event 3 to 5 days in advance. Read our guidelines for working with the media for a complete discussion of how to earn media coverage for an event. Once again, keep your forum nonpartisan. As a trusted nonpartisan voice in the community, CCL are uniquely situated to host candidate forums. And don't forget to follow up. Thank you to the participant candidates with letters and phone calls. Be certain to send a letter of appreciation to the monitor. Send a follow-up email to attendees to thank them for coming and offer additional opportunities to get involved. Here we get to the fun part, activities to be avoided. It's important to remember that CCL chapters should never endorse a specific candidate, participate in partisan campaign activities, or attack candidates. As a CCL chapter, it is really not important to create a negative relationship with a current or future member of Congress. It's important to remember, do not use CCL resources, listservs, Google groups for partisan events. Many chapters have announcement segments at their monthly meetings, and there are candidate supportive announcements that come up. Suggestion from our liaison coordinator is to ensure that any announcement about upcoming candidate events is educational and nonpartisan. No invitations to fundraisers or like events. Emphasize that CCL meetings and other resources should not be used for partisan purposes. There are many other organizations engaged in uplifting candidates from either side of the aisle. Strive for being symmetrical as possible in the process, and we will end up educating more people and candidates on climate solutions as well as helping to depoliticize climate. And I think I will hand it back over to you, Brett.
Thanks, Ben. Before we get to best practices from the field, one last important discussion item to really include in tonight's webinar, and that is, what if one of our CCL chapter members or supporters is running for office? Important thing to remember is that CCL cannot endorse a specific candidate, but individuals are free to help however they wish. So as a result, if you have a CCL volunteer running for office, then continue with the following guidelines. It's important to act consistently with CCL's policy of respect, gratitude, and appreciation for public service towards all candidates. It's also really important that that individual step back if in any leadership role within the CCL group. The other key thing that you can always do is consult CCL staff if you're uncertain about any particular activities within your group. And candidates are also free to talk about CCL in their own outreach, but really make sure to claim that they're not endorsed by CCL. Now, supporters of candidates should also be mindful of the impact that they play in having visible support for their activity. Examples of more public or visible support, including being mindful of what you're posting on social media, or what you're doing with public appearances, or hosting parties, or even donating as a sponsor publicly. Less visible work could include anything from more of the day-to-day campaign grunt work, smaller dollar donations, and door knocking, or engaging in other conversations about that candidate. Lastly, we want to make sure that no matter who you are, CCL welcomes all candidates as members or supporters to our larger network.
Great. Well, we're right on track here, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. And what we're really wanting to do this last little section here for probably another 5 minutes or so is really look at what does this look like on the ground and get a couple of stories from the actual field. We're going to zoom into Utah, Texas, South Carolina, and Illinois, and essentially interview four different chapters that have been involved in really understanding the following four questions. How did they set up their outreach conversations? What tools or approaches that they found were most useful? What did they find were the biggest challenges in that work? And was the effort ultimately worthwhile? Let's zoom in and first start with perhaps one that many of you already have heard of, and that is Utah's Capital Outreach event in the actual Salt Lake City area. So Tom Moyer, the Utah State Coordinator, actually has his contact information as well, and basically shares the story of the Utah Outreach event at the Capitol as part of the lead up to a blog post that described already their work with Representative Mia Love in the past. For the last year, they've been making a push to identify liaisons for each state legislator as well, so not just on the national front, and to schedule face-to-face meetings with them. And the start of this 2018 legislative session, they essentially had face-to-face contact with about a third of the legislature. And, you know, Utah runs about 83% Republican. So most of those conversations are happening with conservatives. And essentially, a climate event was initiated by a Republican legislator, Becky Edwards, and organized primarily by students at the Logan High and West High School. We invited all of the legislators in the state by three different methods. The students called and emailed them.
the CCL liaisons contacted them, and the Republican sponsors and legislator left flyers on each of their desks. And from all of that, we got 21 legislators, so about 20% of the actual state house, to attend, most of whom are Republicans, and they were more that wanted to attend but had conflicting committee assignments. And the beautiful thing about this is that Tom writes, the highlight of the climate event wasn't just the panel discussion, but rather the table discussions that followed afterwards. We've actually got a media clip on here that you can see in the notes afterwards as well. We seated legislators and students, Tom writes, by county. So after the panel discussion, each table was able to continue the conversation with their legislators. My favorite moment was seeing one of the legislators from Southern Utah County, an extremely conservative part of the state, go out in the hallway with about 8 high school students from his district so that they could hear each other more clearly and have a more robust discussion. You can see that photo there in the area. And Tom kind of closes this reflection by saying, interestingly, they didn't just get allies to show up in the legislature to attend. They actually had a number of legislators as well who attended and ended up voting against the resolution. You can see the resolution right there, HCR 007. Wonder if that's a theme. But for him, that was a sign of success. Tom writes that we moved the needle broadly. Those that were opposed to climate action became a little less opposed, even if we didn't end up getting their votes. And for example, his daughter was actually at a table with one of the representatives who was a big opponent of climate action and essentially talked about climate science being used to fool people, but he actually still showed up and was there and engaged in a process and also highlighted the importance of having common ground with energy efficiency as well as creating renewable energy jobs in rural areas of the state. So ultimately, Tom found this effort to be fully worthwhile. You know, they passed this climate resolution for the first time in Utah, and they're thrilled to be able to give their congressional representatives some form of positive side from the state's legislator in a topic and show that it's open for discussion. So let's pivot to a little less robust effort. Not all of us need to go out and, I guess, kind of conquer the whole statewide legislature. Perhaps you're interested in what has been done on a group level meeting. So Chester Sansbury writes out an effort that was happening in South Carolina in the Columbia group chapter and writes, you know, we essentially reached out to all the candidates in the Democratic and Republican field far ahead of time to invite them to one of our future group meetings and to educate our attendees more about their legislative priorities and position on issues related to environmental policy, as well as the chance to hear more from their constituents about their concerns over climate change. Chester writes, we made it very clear that this was not to be a campaign event, but rather an educational forum and discussion for attendees. And in the end, two different Democratic candidates came to our meeting and were the primary agenda. And though it was initially a bit awkward for the two since they were running against each other, they settled in. They were given clear guidelines for presenting. They each had 10 minutes and then were able to jump in to having a chance to discuss the Q&A. They were very clear also in not expecting to have to prepare for a debate. This was much more of a seminar or an educational format. And essentially at the time, it was difficult to keep the conversation on topic, Chester writes, is the challenge. One of the candidates wanted to really kind of divert. And so the recommendation that he gave was making sure to have clearly structured guidelines ahead of time about really ground rules for both the candidates and the participants and what is acceptable discourse and commentary, as well as a moderator that was prepared to jump in. But overall, Chester writes that it was definitely worthwhile. It attracted more CCL members to their meeting. There was time for audience Q&A, and this seemed productive in terms of getting a sense of each of the candidates' views and also educating them about climate change and our concerns. And they also wanted to make sure to emphasize that even though they weren't able to get time that worked for their congressman, they did check in intentionally with them and were able to share the results of the meeting as well. So let's pivot to Illinois as well. So David's on the line here. I can see this. And David shared one of his other local group leaders here. Denise Matthews essentially wrote about an effort for three different chapters that collaborated together to form essentially what was a candidate research and interviewing team. And each team, you know, had several people and conducted background research, including contact information for the candidate. And once everyone had completed this research, they began holding a conference call to compare notes, decide on next steps, and then really start helping each other to set up meetings and call their candidates. Now, the campaign websites they highlighted were a critical source of information about the candidate's position on climate change and the environment. They were able to speak with candidates and primarily shared about carbon fee and dividend through flyers. They also shared about the REMI summary as evidence that the impact would have in the region. The two big challenges that they encountered, one was just getting a meeting with some of the candidates. As we all know, some candidates are more apt to take meetings than others, perhaps if they have a less filled schedule or are more busy and serious on the campaign trail. They weren't offering an endorsement of any kind as an enticement, so I think they felt at times that the candidates were meeting with a group that wasn't as easy as a win and only as potential constituents, but persistence paid off. And teams really succeeded in speaking with all seven of the candidates, five in person directly, one on the phone, and the last one over the email, and really throughout the process maintained CCL's nonpartisan approach, working really hard to remain impartial in their conversations, all of them treated as confidential as well, just like their lobby meetings. And really, ultimately, Denis wrote that they pursued this project because candidates for public office are another type of grassroots, or grass tops rather, that we could approach about Citizens Climate Lobby and fee and dividend. And they succeeded in introducing all seven of these candidates as a result to these concepts and policies. And the unexpected payoff was to also introduce over 150 attendees at a forum audience member to the organization and our signature policy as well. So that's a wonderful example. And there is Denise's contact information for CCL Fox Valley if anyone's interested in finding out more about this effort and how you could replicate it. The last example that I'll just highlight before we cut to Q&A here, and we're right on track for our 40-minute presentation, is from Barton Springs, Texas. And Barton Springs, if you don't know, is actually the seat of Representative Lamar Smith, who is very well known in the climate community and has actually fielded 18 different Republican candidates since he's retiring that are aiming to vie to replace his seat. So you can see it was a hotbed of activity. And essentially, the group leader there, Teresa, wrote about how they set up the outreach conversations. They first created a Google document to keep things organized. They wrote a sample letter to send all candidates based on the Republican candidate guide that we highlighted earlier. The leaders practiced the system first and then devised their own notes on sending out a how-to to the rest of their chapter. It worked really well, and they had said that originally they just asked anyone if they were interested in contacting, and without any support, they got zero response. So once they actually took the time, when they said it was a robust 4 hours, to set it all up and reached out to four initial candidates just to kind of test drive their system, then they found that it was working smoothly. They resent to the rest of the chapter, and four other folks jumped on board immediately and helped them contact and maintain dialogue with the rest of the field. So they reached 17 out of 18 candidates. And what Teresa writes is the most useful tools were the documents that they set up to organize ahead of time, online pages that helped give them links to candidates' websites and Facebook. They actually used Facebook messages to reach out to all their candidates because that was the one place that they could find a way to reach them all. And for candidates who offered on the websites to send a letter, they also used that. But some of them really were only available on Facebook and were only able to sign up even through that venue to email someone. And lastly, the biggest challenge that Teresa writes was enduring the 4 hours it took to set it up and make it happen, but was it worthwhile? In spite of initial feelings that felt overwhelming, she writes, looking back, it was actually a somewhat life-changing experience. We met and got to know Republican candidates who truly are interested in doing the right thing on climate, and we are planning on reaching out to them in continual ways, including setting up a couple of living room conversations. I think that's an excellent idea and a way to kind of connect back to our March speaker with Joan Blades talk. So with that lightning tour, the whistle stop tour of four different places throughout the country, let's open it up for Q&A. I know that we've had a couple of activities already in the chat window there. And so here is Ben and I's email. If you want to get in touch on the DC side of strategy, especially working with folks on the Hill, Ben's email is really simple to remember. Ben@citizensclimate.org. He's got me beat by two characters. Mine is just Brett@citizensclimate.org. If you've got any feedback on this lesson or anything larger about CCU, learning opportunities you'd like to see that we aren't featuring, any questions about training at all, I'm all ears. And most importantly, just wanted to close with thanking all of you for the time. We know that your time is precious, and we really value the fact that you're giving your evening to kind of find out more about this process. We hope that you found this instructive, and we really look forward to working together to make some more of these events happen throughout the rest of the country. Thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful evening.